This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Eita, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politrics with Fresh and Botsang. Botsang Mudimu Wame Muilwa. Ask my God.
My good sir.
What's up?
I can't complain. I'm okay.
It's good to see you.
Yes, sir.
I've got some good news.
Good news.
From winter, this coming winter, mm-hmm. We will be on radio.
Oh, okay.
Every Friday.
Which radio?
I have decided to go with 938. 938 covers most of the north of Jersey, including Midrand and Centurion.
Oh, okay.
The reason we are going with 938 is because it made business sense.
That's good news.
Because with what I was able to negotiate, I'll be able to make more each month than I would at any other radio station.
Very good
with the deal we're able to negotiate, including equity options also.
Okay, so the viewers and the followers must start tuning in.
So, like I said, from winter, every Friday, we'll be doing Wow, What a Week, Politrics on radio with Botsang Mudimu Wame Muilwa.
That's good news, Brother Fresh.
Cannot wait.
Congratulations to you. I heard that you were trending on Twitter yesterday about radio, but I'm not a Twitter or X person.
I'm not a Twitter
I
or X person either.
I didn't go and check, but a few people were like, is Fresh back on radio? I said, but he did announce sometimes last year that come April, he may be going back to radio.
So we're literally building a brand new radio station. And our studios are most likely to be in Midrand.
That would be nice for me.
So you can crawl after a night of wine to studio to do the show.
And the nice thing with radio is that nobody sees your face.
Exactly.
That's the nice thing with the radio.
You know what blew my mind, though? When I was busy speaking to different radio people, I even had a meeting with the people there at the corporation.
Yes.
And what blew my mind was finding out that there is a radio manager that is still upset about the way I left Metro.
To this day.
Can you imagine?
No, man.
And that's when I realized that I actually would not want to be in that building, even if they'd offered me a better deal than the deal I negotiated with 938. I wouldn't want to be in a building like that, where people take things personally.
Yeah, after four years.
After 5 years, and we're not there to make friends. You know what I mean?
That's petty. So, a person at management.
So when I was told that there's a person who's still upset, and then when there was a suggestion that I might need to apologize to them first, that's when I'm like, it's actually fine. I'm fine and I'm thanks.
They didn't read the room. They didn't calculate. And I don't think they needed you.
No, exactly.
I don't think they needed you.
No, but I think they do, though, because a lot of the shows are not doing as well as they should be.
Look, radio has become boring. Since you, Bob Mabena, the late, and quite a few people left, radio has lost. Look, they're still good people.
Mm. No, there's a ton of talent.
Yes.
But there's
the way
also,
it's done.
But there's also a ton of mediocrity.
And I think that's where the problem is. Mm. Anyway, so when does winter start?
So you're not the only one who's had to deal with the management who are very personal.
You will deal with personal management issues. I'll deal with the content of the show.
Absolutely.
When does winter start? In June? Okay, that's okay for me. I'll most probably be back at work at that time.
Oh, yes.
Yes. The good news.
So it's coming together.
Last week, everything was good news for us, my brother.
Oh, no, it's coming together.
They were folding out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we are recording this before the budget vote.
Yes, sir.
Because of studio accessibility issues.
Yes.
And the big story is, can the budget vote pass without the DA's vote? And are the ANC bringing in the EFF? To make up the numbers that the DA obviously would not bring.
Not only the EFF, the ANC, first of all, you recall last week, chief whip, I think it's Mr. Ntuli.
Oh, yes, yes.
He started engagements and negotiations with parties that are not in the GNU.
Sure.
The EFF, Action SA, and others. Mm. Okay. And including some that are in the GNU, which we know they can be swiped easily.
Sure.
The Patriotic Alliance as well as IFP. Mm. I don't see PA and IFP voting against the ANC, no matter how difficult it is. They are the kind of parties that will sacrifice their members' noise to keep the GNU running. But the economic freedom fighters, you know, a request to the ANC or demand to the ANC, they even raised their hand like Action SA to say, we are prepared to even join the government of national unity on condition the DA is out. That's the EFF is saying. And that is not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I said, if we focus only on the budget vote, which will happen, you know, after this recording, I predict that the Action SA, remember they only need Tato 11%.
Sure.
And if you take the vote percentage of Action SA, IFP, as well as a Patriotic Alliance, they will make it. They don't even need the EFF and Umkhonto weSizwe. The Democratic Alliance has said over and over their purpose to be in the GNU is to keep the EFF and the MK out. And they don't, you know, badge about that. They don't beat up, through the bush about that. They are very straightforward. Their biggest threat is if MK or EFF can, you know, share common content with the ANC, then the country has a problem, according to the DA.
Sure.
So I think the budget, you know, this is my view, that the DA will not leave the government of national unity. It is not in their best interest. They will be useless after that. They will have nothing to do. They will not leave the GNU. They may vote against some policy positions,
sure,
or oppose some policy positions because they still behave like the opposition, but they will not quit the GNU. They are in a comfortable space and they need to sit there to watch, to be watchdogs of their interests.
Is there a possibility and an option for the ANC to say, we invited you to be a part of this GNU, we're now revoking that invitation?
Look, it depends on what that agreement that I call an illegal agreement, not binding agreement.
Sure.
Understand? The only thing that they can do is Ramaphosa can dissolve cabinet.
Mm.
Or he can reshuffle cabinet and remove DA, executive members. And that will irk the DA.
Because I feel the DA are on the back foot right now.
They are.
And as one person, one commentator said, the ANC have outplayed the DA on this play.
I think,
and are in a position to call the shots more than they've ever been since the GNU.
Yes, especially that the ANC has managed to soften those who had a hard line against them. For example, the EFF has softened up towards the ANC, especially after the EFF started losing numbers, this losing wards on, you know, municipal by-elections. It has lost key leaders to the Umkhonto weSizwe. But remember, there's also, you know, bitterness in politics. There's grudges as well. The EFF can easily go into the GNU with the ANC minus the DA.
Yes.
In order to spite Umkhonto weSizwe and the DA.
Mm.
So the EFF will become a double winner because their biggest enemy is the DA and MK.
Mm.
And there is a possibility that the ANC can... Look, ANC has outplayed all these political parties.
Sure.
It has managed to maneuver and outplay them. And they have what do we call it? They have, you know, went back and, you know, retook the power from everybody else, even if they only have 39.8%, let's round it off to 40% of the electorate. 10% to make 11%, it's very easy.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. 11%. EFF already has 9.something%. You know that. You look at the percentage of the IFP. As well as the PAC, IFP, PAC, and Patriotic Alliance, their combined percentage, it's more than enough. So the ANC does not need the DA. But Tato, for many years, I've been saying, policies are governed by money. by economic, you know, giants of the country, by the landowners. For the ANC to chuck the DA out of government or power back to the opposition benches, where they will then automatically become the official opposition because they've got a percentage that's more than the MK. Mm-hmm. The ANC will have to get instructions from business.
Sure.
Understand? The ANC, whether they like it or not, whether they believe it or not, but they get instructions from business. They will have to consult with business because it is business that is keeping their coffers and those of the DA running. It is business that is funding them. This issue of VAT, the dispute about VAT, this budget vote will go through. I will find it very difficult. There's only one reason it may not go through, is if the DA doesn't vote with the ANC and the EFF, they don't vote, then it will not go through. I think parties like, you know, the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, the PAC, they have nothing to lose for that one seat, the good party and all. They have nothing to lose, whether they vote or not. I don't think this budget will fail. I think the budget vote, it will go through. I've heard the proposal, and who's going to make it through? Go through? It's Action SA.
Sure.
Understand? Herman Mashaba's party has become the new EFF, has become the new prostitute of political parties in South Africa.
The kingmaker.
Yeah, understand? They run around everybody, they look, they get, I think there's money involved and position involved. There's battering. We gave you Tshwane, we work well in Tshwane and Joburg. They removed the EFF and the DA out of Joburg. They removed the DA out of Tshwane with Freedom Front Plus, and they put the ANC back into power, collaborating with EFF in Tshwane. They will do it nationally as well. And Herman Mashaba has become that game player. I don't know for what benefit, but I think all these political parties, who are they betraying? They're betraying the voters. The biggest loser of this whole thing, it's us, the consumers, who are complaining about the VAT, the price increases. Why would they, I still say, why would a government focus on VAT and still lie to say, if things goes well, we will reverse it? Even the past week, Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, said, if the economy recovers and things goes well, next year we will reverse this VAT. Where on earth has that ever happened in South Africa? When you hear economists talking, there are no prospects of economic growth in this country. The GDP is dropping. Our debt is at its highest point. Maladministration and mismanagement of public funds, it's at its worst state in the history of the democratic South Africa. We are at our worst state. There's no way we can recover that. We wake up next year and say we are dropping VAT back to 14%, not even 15, 14%. So I think they are misleading and lying to the people. Me and you, we are going to wake up come next week. We will be paying VAT, what do you call it, 15.5%. That's given whether we like it or not. And you see what they did. They dangled the carrot in front of us by reducing this week the cost of fuel. So we are saying, oh, it's a little bit of relief because we don't see VAT. We calculate VAT like, you know, economics 101, it's not even 101, it's standard 8.
Yeah.
Understand? So but there's a bigger picture to this whole thing. The fiscus is not in good condition. The proposal, if I may explain this, I read the proposal of the Action SA. I think they are lying to people and misleading the Action SA and ANC. They are saying they've put a proposal on the table that the budget, speech, you know, must be voted into action. So the vote must go through, but with an instruction to the Minister of Finance, the Treasury, not to implement VAT as it was proposed. What nonsense is that? There's nothing like that. Parliament,
but also
legislate.
At this stage, it's either we agree with it or we don't. There can still be a back and forth.
There's no back and forth. And also, when you don't vote the budget in, it's not only because of the VAT thing. It's the entire budget, either you vote it or not. And everybody else will bring other things that they don't agree with in the budget. The Democratic Alliance will bring things they don't agree with. The ANC agrees with everything, as they've been doing for the last 8 years. Their MPs agrees with everything that the minister presents in front of them. They never even question these things because they vote collectively in the National Assembly. But I'm predicting that the budget vote will go through if Action SA has their upper hand and they agree with the ANC. The other small parties, the ANC is managing them very well.
You know, when you look at how the relationship between the DA and the ANC has played out within the GNU.
Yes.
You can tell that the DA are playing the long game, because they're looking at the next election.
Yes.
And they're looking at 5 years from now, that they can look back and say to the electorate, you can see how we kept them accountable. You can see the work we have been doing.
And
surely, with this shift in tides, in terms of the relationship between the ANC and the other parties outside the GNU, surely there's an opportunity for the ANC to go it without the DA.
Yeah, there is. Look, the opportunity for the ANC is now. If I was the ANC and I want to win back the hearts and the minds of those upset by going to bed with the DA, because this arrangement is ANC and DA. Others are just kids in this marriage.
Yeah, but Kapile, the two parties.
This is an opportunity for the ANC to divorce the DA. But Tato, it's going to come with a heavy price. And the price is funding. We have Trump on this other side. Then there's another element of all these criminal activities and allegations like Palapala that can disrupt, a parliament. You understand? And the DA and the White Capital and other parties like the Good Party, Inkatha Freedom Party, Reverend Mishwe's Party, ACDP, they think everything is okay in the country. They want the status quo to remain in the country because they think there's peace, there's tranquility, there's democracy, and there's harmony. In their minds, in their books, that's what they want. So it is going to be very, very difficult for the ANC to go with other parties without. And they just need two or three small parties, and I've mentioned Inkatha Freedom Party, I've mentioned the Patriotic Alliance, and then it could be ACDP or the PAC or anybody. Then they are sorted. Or they just need the EFF and one other party and the PA, you understand? But that will not happen because it will not be in the best interest of white capital. It will not be in the best interest of white people. The ANC still has to satisfy its funders. They have to, they owe them. And if people don't want to accept, they still think the ANC as the former liberation movement representing the black majority, then people are doomed because the ANC is not on that line. The ANC has pronounced on capitalism. The ANC has pronounced on the market, liberal market economy, while its allies like SACP and COSATU are talking socialism and communism and the people first. The ANC is not thinking there. It's thinking of political power that will not upset the economy. Who are the owners of the economy in South Africa? It is not black people. Not even the so-called black middle class. You understand? Because in my books, black middle class, the people that are not going to be impacted by this tax increase a lot is the indebted black people that are called black middle class.
Yes.
You owe your car, you owe your house, you owe your clothes, you owe almost everything that you own in life.
You're living on credit.
You are living on credit. So yes. Black middle class, to me, it actually means a person who has access to credit. When banks call you, they can give you 1 million to can buy a vehicle, but they will not give you 500,000 or 250,000 to start a business because we are seen as consumers who must pay taxes, who must pay, their rates and levies and taxes, and their credit, fund your credit, not have a business because you'll be competing with the captains of the industry. I mean, how many of us go to the bank and we get loans to buy a car or worth 1 million, but go to the bank and ask them for 300,000 to start a spaza shop, a well-equipped shop or any form of business, you will never get that money. But because we are a salaried employee with a guaranteed salary, you will get credit. And this is where they've got us. Understand? This is where the captains of the industry has the ANC, because the majority of the people who reason and think for the ANC are the so-called black middle class, employed people living in suburbs who are 6% of the population, thinking for the other 54% of the population.
Yeah.
Understand? And that's where the challenge is. But if the ANC had guards and they didn't have smaller than skeletons, okay, I don't know if these skeletons are smaller anymore in the cupboard. The ANC had an opportunity now to win back the hearts of the voters, to ditch the DA because it has successfully derailed them, and to bring back, they will gain their, look, from today I can tell you, if we go on elections today, the ANC will lose more than 10% again. But they have an opportunity between now and the local elections coming in less than a year to can work on this whole thing and rebuild the organization and win the hearts of the people, like to show the people that we are brave, we can challenge the DA, and we can ignore white, you know, people lament, and they are, you know, they're crying. White people are crying about everything. Yeah? Also an article where there's a concerted effort of white groups, even in the media, they're using media for a lot, where they are crying about how white people are endangered in South Africa, their lives are not safe, they've become poor in the New South Africa. That's all rubbish. That's all lies. Actually, white people are safer, more comfortable in the democratic South Africa than they were in the apartheid South Africa. That time, they were protected by an army and the police and privileges, white privileges. That's what they had. Now they are protected by the constitution, by the ANC, and by the wealth they acquired.
Yes.
There's no threats of guerrillas bombing them in churches or in schools or what. They don't have those threats. They are affected by a crime like me and you. And unfortunately, our politicians, in doing the budget, you know, the treasury, they don't think about the key aspects of this country: security, health, and education. They are not thinking to prioritize those. They talk about it, but look at the money they put there vis-a-vis the money they put somewhere else. You understand? So, look, Tato, we can scream, tumble, cry. We'll be talking about this next week. That budget will go through as the ANC presented it, because they master the art of manipulating other political parties, which I regard them as very weak and not caring.
Yeah, but...
And he laughs at me.
No, because I think, like I'm saying, there's an opportunity for the ANC to nip this in the bud right now. Otherwise, in 5 years or even in 2 years, it's going to come back and hurt them.
It's going to hurt them.
Because as much as the GNU is supposed to be what's best for their people
now,
as a party, you also need to think selfishly that, is this collaboration hurting us or not? Because this collaboration might make them look good and make us look bad.
But DJ,
so at
a
political
Fresh,
level, what are we doing about that?
I'm one of the people that disagree with the narrative that the GNU is best for the people. What has the GNU differently done for the people? Okay, some people will say it's still early, but are we seeing the signs? The DA went in, then we thought they are going to be watchdogs and cut the ANC. They claim to be doing checkmates and checkpoints, all that. Are the people benefiting from that? What the GNU has done, it has actually brought more players into government and stabilized the economy. The economy is not going. It's stabilized and it has secured. It has brought a little bit of less noise and stability in government. You know, that's all it has done. What are the tangible things?
Can we measure it immediately, though? Because sometimes measurement is year on year or every quarter.
Quarterly. We are on the third quarter of the GNU. We just started the third quarter of the GNU. We just started the new financial year. Okay, without the budget.
Sure.
The new financial year of government commenced, you know, on the 1st of April. We can measure. We can look at the last 9 months and see what have they done in the last 9 months. And if there's progress, the policies talking, let me tell you, talking in this country. And writing policies. I've been in government for over 27 years. We write better policies. We write good policies. We go into workshops and conferences. We come with this beautiful document that gets presented in front of the people. What has improved? You always talk, Fresh, about low-hanging fruits. Potholes are low-hanging fruits. There's more potholes now than before the GNU. And they will start blaming, no, but there was a damage of 9 wasted years or 30 years, so we cannot be seen to be fixing that in 9 months. You understand? I'm saying there should be steps that shows when you build a house, you can't say I'm building and when I come after 6 weeks, I don't see anything. There must be some digging somewhere. There must be some foundation somewhere. There must be cleaning of the area. So I don't see. Tell me one. Tell me one. Murder levels have grown up. Rape levels have grown up. Unemployment has gone up. Tax is going up. What is improving?
I think it's too soon to measure accurately exactly, you know, what the numbers say in terms of okay, we've got data from before, we've got data for a year later.
When the reserve bank...
Or let's say the intentions, I feel, are nobler than before they were in there.
I always say intentions have always been good of all political parties. Mm. They have always been good. When the reserve bank go every 3 or 6 months to look at the rate, the repo rate, whatever.
Yes.
They always say year in, year out, same month, same period. Why can't we do the same now and say, where was the country in terms of security, education, health, and employment at the same time before the GNU?
Mm.
Understand? We can do that every quarter. We can review quarterly, but let's leave the difficult ones because it looks like I'm being harsh on them and making things difficult for them. Let's look at the governance, inside governance. Has it improved corruption, maladministration, wasted spending? Has it improved, Tato? Now, these are things that the DA, the good party, the PAC, and all that. Have the departments that these political parties are leading, have they improved internally? I'm talking about internal improvements now. Forget all the infrastructure in the country.
Yes.
Have they improved internally in how they are managing finances, how they are managing their budget, how they are spending their money, how they are treating people at work? Has there been an improvement? Because those are immediate things that they should have done. My answer is no. They haven't. They're still overspending, even underspending. People don't know that in the Public Service Administration, according to the PFMA, underspending is actually a wrong thing. Have they improved on that? My answer is no, they haven't. What have they done? Despite producing policies and plans and talking, there I will give them 90 out of 100.
Sure.
Policies, talking, presentations, 90 out of 100, all of them. Can they tell me what have they done besides that? If they want to tell me that it takes a year to produce a policy, then we are a doomed nation.
Do you feel they've done enough?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you on the comment section. Do you think there's light at the end of this DA, ANC collaboration and GNU? Because like you said, in the bigger scheme of things, it's those two plus many more.
And I can give the viewers and followers who are going to comment an example of what they can use.
Sure.
Look at in Tshwane, the city of Tshwane.
Mm.
The mayor of the city of Tshwane is neither from the DA or the ANC.
Mm.
The mayor is from Action SA, and I can't remember the speaker, maybe from ANC or whatever. Eh? Look at what they have done. You say, I must not give, it's not yet 1 year. That mayor is not in that position for more than a year. You understand? But look at the number of things that we as residents of Tshwane can count that mayor has done in less than a year.
Sure.
Why at the national government we can't do the same? And I tell that mayor and I compare that mayor with Dada Morero of Joburg. Okay, Dada Morero has been in the Joburg seat for less than 6 months.
Yeah, but he's busy with the...
He's busy showing the president the city tour.
He's busy with the G25 routes.
Yeah.
He's fixing lights and potholes along those routes.
And I heard them say, Panyaza, hey guys, the premier saying, let us at least fix the lights and the robots to be waking when the G20 people come here. Mm. How embarrassing that statement is. Do you fix them because they are guests?
But it goes back to what I was saying, that there should have never been an apology by the mayor or by the premier to the president about the state of Jozi.
Yes.
That apology should have been to the people of Joburg.
The people, yes.
Because that is your constituency, not the president.
Exactly. You know, when they said that, I remember what my mom taught us. My mother used to say, there's no spring cleaning in my house. I don't want to hear any day people talk of spring cleaning.
We clean every day.
We clean every day. You keep the house clean.
You clean as you go.
My mom used to say, when there's a party, a funeral or what, unforeseen circumstances, you see people painting walls, cleaning windows. Was it okay for us to live in a dirty house? Now that there are guests coming, we start cleaning. And that's exactly what they are doing. They want to clean because there are guests coming into town.
But we've said it before that as much as a broken window policy like they had in New York can be harsh, the minute we don't even fix broken windows, the entire building is going to go down. So at some stage, there needs to be zero tolerance when it comes to, especially infrastructure maintenance, when it comes to fruitless expenditure, when it comes to people taking money to say, we want to build housing, and not one house is built, but no one is going to prison for that.
My brother, you know, maybe we must raise funds or ask for donors. You know, that's my favorite American politician. I live by that book. Mm. Maybe we must get money somewhere and buy our politicians 400 copies of that book and give them. They must read that book, actually. Mm. It's not just a novel. You know, the broken window policy. Mm. It worked in the most disastrous city in the world. New York, it's a mess.
It works in life. If in your relationship you don't fix the small things, the little red flags, eventually the whole thing is a farce.
Hey, these days you talk a lot about relationship. I thought we are still out of relationships.
No, let me tell you, I'm talking a lot about relationships because life is relating to one another.
Yeah.
How political parties relate is a relationship.
Okay.
Our relationship with the people we vote for, that is relationships. And if we don't manage them at the basic, like your mother would say, don't clean because guests are here. Mm. Clean because you want to be in a clean area.
In a clean house. And
because how water.
And that's where the ANC should be at the moment. If I was the ANC, if I had to advise them, that's what they should be focusing on in order to, you know, to rekindle the relationship with the voters.
I think we need to move on.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk infrastructure development. What's happening there?
You know, I thought of that and brought that. There's a conference that happened this week, a summit led by the Department of Public Works.
Yes.
Dean McPherson,
yes.
Yes. I was just thinking that we spoke about this before.
Mm.
Number one, why is McPherson and the DPW doing this now? Because they've been given the Expropriation Act.
Okay.
Remember, the Expropriation Act is sitting at the Department of Public Works.
Yes.
And before I even go to their summit, I want to remind the viewers and everyone who's interested in this that I'm one of the people who have said that Expropriation Act, it's misplaced at public works.
Mm.
And the government, in responding to Donald Trump and AfriForum and Solidarity and the Liars, they should have even said that's not the Land Expropriation Act. It's a General Expropriation Act.
Mm.
The reason it's sitting at public works, it is because public works is the landlord of government properties.
Mm.
Now, this is what Dean McPherson and the DA are doing. They call on this summit of talking about
turning South Africa into a construction site.
Into a construction site, yes. You know, like, we want to see construction. You know why?
Mm.
You know why? Who's going to benefit when there's properties going up? Who has the capital to can build malls?
Mm.
And they're not talking about road construction because that is not, they're not talking about infrastructure like roads and universities and factories. Even if they can include factories, they are talking about...
It's massive projects.
Massive projects.
And Botswana construction is not going to get in there. It'll be the big boys that get in there.
Exactly the point. Mm. That's the catch.
Mm.
So this whole thing, the DA led by McPherson, have actually come with something that's going to outclass and outshine the ANC.
Mm.
They are going to get investors and huge capital investors. And these big boys, you know, the Atterbury brothers and all these big companies to come and construct residential accommodation because there's a demand where the government has failed for the what? The so-called black middle class.
Sure.
The young people who are coming to work, they are looking for apartments. They're going to construct shopping malls whose shops are going to occupy those shopping malls. Who are the people that are the biggest spenders and shoppers in shopping malls? Not because of our percentage growth. Even in a white-dominated place like Verwoerdsberg, Centurion, in modern day, the white people are the majority in the area. They've just built a new mall around there in Irene. The white people are in majority. They are over 70%. But the shoppers are black people in there. People travel from as far as Attridgeville to go and shop there. So this infrastructure plan that the DPW is coming, it is to actually take business to the big boys of the industry. It is actually going to make the richer people more richer because we are consumers.
Is this your conspiracy about the thing or is this as a matter of fact?
I would not regard it as a conspiracy because you look at what is the responsibility of public works.
Okay.
You look at what are they going to construct. I've made an example. Are they going to construct more prisons? Are they going to construct more schools? Are they going to construct more roads? The answer is no. They are talking about constructing malls, constructing flats and apartments that will belong to the state. You understand? So who is going to build those malls and those apartments that are for rental or for sale, not the human settlements apartment? It is going to be white capital. It's going to be big business. Who is going to be running, if it's an estate, running the management of the estate? It's white companies. Who is owning 95%, if not 100%, of shops that we find in malls? Black people who own brands, they don't have shops in a mall. They lease. They don't own, understand? Who are the people that are going to believe? The DA is saving its constituency.
I was going to say, so is this you saying the DA know exactly what they're doing?
They know exactly what they're doing.
But what would you have rather happen then from Public Works?
Public Works.
Because either way, infrastructure is needed.
Yes, yes.
Upgrade of infrastructure is needed. And more often than not, it will be the same companies that do the upgrades or the improvements or the new infrastructure.
What the previous government?
So what I'm saying to you is Minister McPherson is damned if he does, he's damned if he doesn't.
No, Tato. I've already said, Minister McPherson and the DA, they are doing the right thing for their constituents.
Sure.
So they are on the right track according to their plan.
But in the bigger picture, are they not doing the right thing for the country?
They are not, because, again, only a few minority will benefit from that.
So how would you have rather this was approached?
What the previous government did right, and we could have cleaned that up, it was disturbed by corruption and maladministration. It's where, for example, we build a road. And I use roads as an example. Sunrail is building roads.
Sure.
And they are building 20 kilometers of a road. And part of the tender process or conditions would say whoever is going to come up with this tender must have 50% black companies. Despite 50%, if you give another black company to do the pavement, give another one to install the traffic lights, give another one to paint. So this piece of cake of a 200 kilometer road is shared amongst various companies. In this instance, when it's private properties that are being built, or like malls, you can't dictate because it's private business. But once it's done under the ambit of the government, and these are government properties to be leased out by government. For example, most of government departments, they never maintained the buildings that the previous government had left. I'm talking about the apartheid government.
Yes.
They are now out of those buildings. What is the government departments and entities doing? Where are they sitting? They are renting. Why don't they build? McPherson should be building using government capacity. If there's no capacity, upskill the people. Build government offices. The Department of Transport is one of the few departments that is still sitting in the government-owned building that is dilapidated and falling apart. But majority of them are sitting in nice, posh buildings that are owned by private companies.
I was going to say, I remember when I still worked at YFM, 97, 98, 99, a friend of mine was a city planner in the city of Joburg.
Okay.
And they were at the council offices, Mo Bramfontein.
Yes.
Those are sitting there.
Dilapidated, falling apart.
But all of these other departments are renting in other buildings. Why are they renting when they've got a nice precinct to
them? That's exactly what I'm saying. The DA plan is going to fund and accelerate debt. Instead of us sitting and saying, what do we need? In the Zuma administration, the so-called 9 wasted years, they built 2 universities, one in Mpumalanga, one in the Northern Cape. We don't have universities. We need universities.
Sure.
There is an influx of people.
I want to call it Chimus.
Yeah, but turn them into full institutions.
Butsang secretarial cause.
Those fake ones. But Tato, what I'm saying is, for example, one of the biggest problems we have in Gauteng is the influx of people to come and look for economic opportunities. And we must be able to say, where are these people coming from? From the Eastern Cape and from Limpopo. Let us go and start a huge infrastructure project in the Eastern Cape so that we, one, create jobs, we create buildings for the government, we also control and manage the influx of people in the already overpopulated Gauteng. That's what I'm saying.
But a lot of people have been suggesting that for the last 20 years. And more often than not, the minute you mention influx control,
yes,
or incentivizing people not to leave the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
People accuse you of, yeah, but the apartheid government did the same. Why do you want to control where people go? What do you say to those people?
You are not controlling them. You are putting,
whether incentivized or not.
Yeah, but you are not controlling. You are, look, right now the people of Eastern Cape are crying about pit latrines,
mm,
as well as bridges to cross rivers for kids to go to school. The national government, in support of the Eastern Cape government, should be pumping money into those two things. What it will do, it will employ people in the Eastern Cape,
mm,
who will have to construct those things. It will save lives. It will create children not to go and look to come to school in Gauteng because there's a better school in the Eastern Cape that has a toilet. And it will save money for the families. Right now, I've heard more and more of my friends, including myself,
mm,
we are actually talking about leaving Gauteng, mm, because we have realized that it is a shithole to be living here. It's a concrete jungle. Everything is fast. Everything is this. Everything.
Mm.
You know, I look at people who live in the so-called semi-urban or rural areas.
Mm.
They've got a better quality life than us, Tato.
Mm.
We're talking about the quality of life. A government should incentivize people by making life good for the people, not incentivize by putting money in the pockets of
people.
Give
them a reason not to leave that
area.
Give
people a reason to appreciate where they stay. And we have seen it. We have seen Mangope in the yesteryear doing it in Bophuthatswana,
mm,
where the people of the so-called Transvaal or central government, we were craving and running to visit the former Bophuthatswana because of the incentives that were there, the quality of life. We have seen Orania, what they have done now for their racist African community. You understand? It's based on race. It's based on the African races, Bure culture, but it has worked for them because it has made life quality better for their people.
Mm.
I'm saying the government and McPherson, when they are talking about infrastructure, you know, development, massive infrastructure building, don't tell me about building another mall in Gauteng. That's going to make people more poor.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think per capita, this country probably has more malls than most countries in the world.
Actually.
And they are still going up.
Actually, let me add, the biggest shopping mall in the Southern Hemisphere of the world is in South Africa.
Mm.
You understand? Mm. You can see what the biggest shopping mall in the Southern Hemisphere of the world.
I know we love malls.
It's in South Africa.
We're like lions, we malls.
Yes, we are consumers, we are spenders, and we spend what we don't have.
Mm.
Somebody was asking me, who they haven't talked to me in 3 years, how did I survive 3 years without an income?
Mm.
I said, I've struggled, I've suffered, I live one hand out, but because I did not have a debt.
Ah, yes.
That's what saved me.
Being debt-free is very underrated.
Yes. You're being debt-free.
We love credit because it gives an illusion of
you are wealthy.
I can afford.
Now, the other thing in conclusion on this matter.
Mm.
Again, you are not going to talk to me. Maybe economists. Look, I'm not an economist. I studied and I majored with economics throughout, from standard 8 until postgraduate. And I'm not an economist. I'm simply saying basic economics has taught me,
yes,
that if you are building a financial capacity, a wealth somewhere, you've got the so-called foreign direct investors. You've got investors who are going to invest on capital. When the returns come, the profits, where is this return?
Sure.
Where is the capital investment by these multinational companies that have been investing in South Africa for all these years, including our own local companies? Where is the capital return? Where is the benefit of the state in the despite taxes?
Sure.
That the EFF and many others have said they are not paying taxes enough like they are supposed to be paying. Actually, even SARS saying that. But where is the returns? Where are we seeing? We create an opportunity as the Minister of Public Works and the people build buildings. They rent them out. They make profit. Where is the benefit of the state? You can't tell me the benefit is that we've got beautiful infrastructure that is better than any other country in Africa. That's not how you judge and gauge the economy. You gauge the economy by determining the returns. Where are the returns? For the people, because this Department of Public Works, it's for the people.
Sure.
Hospitals, clinics, you still have places in Gauteng. Let's not talk other provinces that are rural, like Northwestern, in Cape and Limpopo. Gauteng, you still have clinics in my own township, in Motlakeng, Randfontein, in Olifantshoek, next to Centurion. You still have clinics operating from a caravan.
Mm.
The infrastructure, that's the kind of infrastructure we need. Go and build a clinic.
Mm.
Are they saying we are comfortable that there are kids today who are in classrooms that are made of containers?
Mm.
In Gauteng, I don't want to talk about, you understand? That's the kind of infrastructure. And again, we have TVET colleges. We have invested on youth to go and do bricklaying and artisans. It is time for public works to hire those people. You remember that project of DPW? It's time to hire that project that's been going on for almost 20 years. Go and hire those people to build this infrastructure. If you take companies that are going to manage and oversee the process, let it be a condition that we have 10 graduates who are bricklayers from this TVET college. We want them to be employed for building this clinic at this township. That's how it should work. Let the people build their own infrastructure. That's how you compensate them. They feel good and they feel important and they feel recognized for the skills they've acquired, funded for by the state or NEFSAS or whoever. If we don't do that, then no, having these meetings in Sandton and summits and talking of how many summits did we have since Ramaphosa took over? President Ramaphosa is a very good key maker of having rich people under one roof. From all over the world, Saudi Arabia, everywhere, under one roof. We spoke of energy. They spoke of job summit. Now we are talking of infrastructure summit. What other summit have we talked about? Everything else. Science, artificial intelligence. You know then? How many artificial intelligence or IT or have we had in this country to improve the lives of the people? And we still have traffic lights working through Eskom electricity that is absent. But we've had so many summits. I mean, you don't need a scientist, rock scientist, 90% in mathematics or physical science to can apply your mind in that. Why do we still have traffic lights that are operated through electricity when the grid is constrained, when the cables are stolen, the copper cables, instead of using the natural God-given sunlight to operate street lights? I mean, these days, Tato, you drive in between cities where there's crime and street lights are off. By the way, people think street lights is a privilege. It's part of security.
Sure.
Street lights are off. And you still, what people say, no, there's a problem with electricity or cables are stolen. Why do you still have copper cables? Why? When you have scientists who have said,
because surely there is money to be made in the replacement of said copper cables.
Now you have answered what I said. I said the DA has planned this very well. There is money to be made by these conglomerates and big companies.
Sure.
That's why they want to improve infrastructure.
I'll give an example. In our area, in North Riding, I think we've had no electricity for the last 21 days, because the cables are replaced, the next day they're gone.
That's stolen, yeah.
Cables are replaced, the next day they're gone. Luckily, I've got solar, so I'm not suffering the lack of power.
Yes.
But there are people who don't have solar, there are people who can't afford the solar. And someone in the WhatsApp group was saying, someone is making money here.
Yes, that's exactly.
Somebody is making money here.
I've been saying it for the last 1 year. And if anybody wants to send me to jail for that, to come and bring out the names of the people, I will. The people who are stealing the cables and the transformers and the what, it's not the Nyaupe boys and petty criminals anymore. It is the same people that are installing them. I'm telling you, there was a report.
So create the problem and be the solution.
Yes, there was an official report in the city of Tshwane, in one of the local newspapers, that a transformer that was stolen somewhere in Pretoria North, in Soshanguve, was being installed in Pretoria East, in a suburb. Then you take the one for the East, you install it on the suburb. So who's stealing that? Because these things have serial numbers.
And it's a whole transformer.
You understand? It's a whole transformer. Who's stealing that? Bootsang can't do that. And Nyaupe boy will choke himself trying to do that. It's an expert. And then if they don't trip, they're struck by lightning. Now it's on fashion. And there's more lightnings these days. I don't know what's going on. Every time there's a lightning, some transformer trips somewhere. Then 3-4 days without electricity. And so we have subsided a little bit on water crisis. We are back on electricity crisis. After 1 month, it's water again. Then it's roads. Then it's the license card making machine. Somebody's making money. It's all about money making. People must wake up. People are eating. Now, the Democratic Alliance, the Patriotic Alliance, the PAC, and all others have joined the eating wagon. They are realizing that the soup is thicker in this train, and let us eat. But what they are fighting about is who must eat the bigger part of the cake. And the ANC still feels, no, but we have 40%. We must get the bigger side of the cake. So the ANC outsmarted. They operated like the old apartheid. You know the divide them rule. The ANC did not divide the nation. The ANC has brought other parties to say, if you eat, you keep quiet. Mm. So you made them eat. Now they are quiet because they can fund their political parties and they can fund their lifestyle. Mm. That's why Brother Gayton McKenzie stand up and say, hey, it's nice in the GNU. Mm. The EFF were left behind. It's very nice to be in here. In this GNU, we must save it. Mm. Why would you want to save a wagon that is not delivering the best interest of the people? What will be the reason? The government of national unity, I'm telling you, it has stabilized politics in government, not national politics, sure. And it benefiting those who are in the GNU. That's why today Action SA and the EFF are raising their hands and saying, if Ramaphosa is wanting to talk to us, we can talk. Why now? Because they are now realizing that, wow, we're left behind. We are losing out. There's money there. Yeah. Money is not the salary of MPs and ministers. No. Mm. Money is who controls the budget, the tenders. They go to who? Members of my political party. Mm. The political party benefits. That's where the money is.
Sure.
Understand? And I think Gayton McKenzie was correct when he says, the AFF realized that their negotiation strategy was wrong and they are now crying babies being left out. Because if they were in government, the DA would have been naturally pushed out. The voting of this budget would have been easier, but they are outside. And Herman Mashaba is the only brave one who wants to go through the main door, not the back door. You know, he's very brave, and for that, we must congratulate him.
And this is the person that, before the election, says, under no circumstances,
he said, in 300 years,
would I ever work with the ANC.
And you want to trust such people today, my brother, with infrastructure for our kids, never. Not this bunch of people in government.
But nothing is forever. I mean, I'm sure you had an Eskel 30 years ago. Even gel activator, a black like me, doesn't last forever. Neither do political decisions and statements and utterances. Hey, we know that.
I hope Herman learns from that, but yes. Oh, by the way, for those who don't know, we have the reason Fresh is mentioning Black Like Me Gel, because the Action SA leader, Herman Mashaba, is the founder of Black Like Me Products. Exactly. So when we grew up, look that young man is nodding. When we grew up, we used to have Perm, Eskel and Wave. Yeah. So Black Like Me was the product, and it was made for by a black person, and it became the best-selling hair product. And Herman Mashaba became a multimillionaire because of that. So yeah. He's a seriously self-made multimillionaire. We must give him credit.
And the days that Eskel would come out so perfect, like so, I remember I had one that was like perfect, straight out of high school.
Yeah.
Even had a curl.
Yeah, yeah, so the Michael Jackson curl on your
and
phone.
And then a bounce, boss. Yeah.
That was Black Like Me, the
so,
hair product.
Brahman, thank you very much.
Yeah, we were the hot ones. I used to have Wave.
No, I believe you.
Yeah, it was only sometimes I'll have a ponytail.
I was going to say, when I about the ponytail,
come on. I used to have a ponytail.
Anyway, let's move along. So 2-3 days ago, what Trump calls Liberation Day happened, where, like Oprah, you get a tariff, there's tariffs everywhere from the U.S. But also there's a delegation that went to the U.S.
Yes.
Tell us about this delegation. What happened?
Okay, you recall just before President Rasool, President, Ambassador Rasool.
Yo, he wishes. Yo, Rekafela.
Before Ambassador Rasool was chucked out of the USA.
Yes.
You remember there were already tensions that time that the South African president hasn't spoken to. President Trump, the South African embassy in Washington, has not had meetings with the Trump administration. At that time, there was conversations that President Ramaphosa is intending to send a team that is going to engage the Trump administration.
Mm.
And we spoke about it, and I said, I don't think it's right that should happen when we have an embassy that is supposed to be doing that job. It will mean there's a problem there.
Sure.
And actually, I became right because it shows that there was a problem. That's why the Trump admin did not want to talk to us because they had no relationship with Rasool. And you know, the silver cup was broken a long time ago. Now, what President Ramaphosa and Minister Lamola did right was to have this delegation led by the DG of DERCO. So it was led by the principal diplomat of the country, the director general of DERCO, and few other people who are influential people in the society, including businessmen. So they formed a delegation that now the Trump administration during the past week have engaged with them. They've met them. They didn't meet President Trump, but they've met, number one, the Department of State Security, which is a very leading department in the U.S. They've met the Office of the Secretary of State, which is their counterpart of DERCO. And then they've met also the business department delegation. Now they've met, so there is progress. Now the Washington has opened doors to Pretoria, and they've met, and they say the engagements were fruitful, and they reassured them that there's no expropriation of white land and what are the country's policies and all that. So, Tato, this is it's less than 2 weeks since Ambassador Rasool is back. We already had a meeting with Washington. And for me, it is progress. And you see, when you do things right using the right people, they've used the DG of DERCO to lead this delegation. As I've always said, use the right people to engage with their counterparts. Understand? Don't go and pick up everybody because of political favors to go and talk about government things who doesn't have an understanding of how government should work. So I think this will now open an opportunity for us to can start looking for an ambassador. I can tell you there were 8 names there already, and I knew of the 3 names. Unfortunately, my name was not there. And then they were reduced to 5 during the course of this week when ANC met in. So President Ramaphosa is sitting with 3 names now, the final list of names. Out of the 8 names that went to the president to appoint as ambassador to the US, 5 of them were career diplomats. I can confirm that. 5 of them were people who are career diplomats. 3 of them are in DERCO. 2 are retired former ambassadors. And I think that is the right thing to do, to select a person that way. So we will probably know in the next a week or two who's going to be our ambassador candidate, because they must start compiling a list. The Americans are busy compiling a list of the first diplomats that President Trump will receive their credentials, and we don't want to miss that
window.
That opportunity. So I think that's what's happened. That's what South Africa has done, internationally this week. You see, the only problem with this engagement is that they're held in secrecy, man. The information that I have, I had to dig with it. I don't know why in secrecy, because it's not a military or intelligence operation. It's a diplomatic operation or engagement that they owe us that.
Yeah, but where in the world do, presidents and departments of international relations or foreign affairs have a public selection for ambassadors? I don't know that it's ever done anyway.
What do you mean public selection? Of taking ambassadors from...
Of deciding who, where, or like...
It's done. It's normal. It's a normal practice. It does happen. All countries do that. Trump has just... This guy that Trump has nominated to South Africa as the ambassador. He's not a career diplomat. He's not even a politician. He's from the media. So you look at...
But what I'm saying, though, was it a public... lead done selection?
No. Okay, yes. Is that what you are saying? No. When I say they must do it publicly, I didn't mean the selection.
Okay.
I'm talking about the engagements between our delegation to the U.S. And that it's not in our media. It's not being reported. We have to dig for that. But no, the selection, it's normally held in secret. Because you also, don't want your ambassadors to be exposed before the receiving country accept them. I'm just praying that whoever they're going to select, Trump must not reject that person. It will throw us backwards. But with President Trump, you'll never know, my brother. You are friends today. Tomorrow is a different story.
So, for instance, a former Ambassador Rasool said, don't pander to the U.S. by sending a white ambassador.
Yeah.
But would it not be strategic to send a white ambassador?
Last week, I said to you and the viewers, that's the only part that I agree with Rasool in everything he has done. We should not do that, Tato. We will be bending too much. We'll be compromising. Once we start thinking of the color, reality, yes. Strategically, yes. But there are black people of color. And you see, I have a problem with the black, white, Indian color.
Or send a coconut. Moose is there. At least he can speak like them, and he can even switch on his Obama like he did.
You see, when he people was like Musi Maimane will be well accepted by the U.S. You understand? Don't, number one, we two things that we must not do. Sure. We must not sell a political radical like Botsang, who will not know how to handle the situation. If you're going to send somebody who's pro-Palestine, and what, so use diplomacy and politics, not pigmentation and race.
Yes.
Understand? You know what is the problem with the U.S. It's Israel and Palestine issue. So don't send somebody who's pro that. Don't send Dr. Alan Busak, for example. You understand? He's a so-called colored person. He's a clergy. He's well-respected in the world. He's a former freedom fighter.
He's a former eater.
He has done everything that fits the ANC. And you understand? He's balanced. But will the Americans accept Dr. Alan Busak? The answer is no. Because his position on Palestine is uncompromised.
It's very clear.
It's very clear. You understand? I think he will become a very good ambassador. But I don't think he'll become a good ambassador in the U.S. And you need somebody young. Trump is going to stress all ambassadors of all countries who will be in Washington. Trump is going to stress them. You don't need a tired, old, sickly person. You need somebody very strategic, very energetic. Trump administration is full of young people as well.
Yeah.
So you need people who can reason and have the energy to operate at that level.
So in diplomatic circles, which you are from, obviously, there are so-called hardship posts.
Yeah.
Certain countries are deemed hardship posts.
Yes.
So you can't be sent from one hardship post to another, for instance.
They normally don't do that.
So, I mean, I remember when I was in Lagos in 2000, I was friends with one of the embassy workers.
Okay.
And that was their hardship post at the time.
Okay.
At the rate America's going, surely it's going to be a hardship post to be posted to America.
Actually, you are smart and right. Let me tell you. If somebody asked me if I would take Washington, for example, if I want to go back, and I said, no, I would not.
Yeah.
You are going to work your ass or butt off.
Yes.
You are going to be on your toes. It's not going to be a relaxed post.
You'll
so it's not going
fires.
To be a nice diplomatic relationship.
Yeah.
You are always going to be on the edge or on your toes. So being going to the U.S. or to Washington specifically is going to be very tough for any diplomat, particularly the countries that Donald Trump views as anti-America,
sure,
like South Africa. Now we are in the bad books. Look, I wish luck to whoever is going there. But I think I made an example last week. I said these are the days I miss people. He was an elderly person, but you know, the former state protocol leader in South Africa, Billy Mudise.
Yes.
Yeah, that kind. I was just mentioning him, and I said that kind of a diplomat,
seasoned.
Look, there's somebody that I like. I don't know why did he leave the diplomatic community. Doctor. He's a doctor now. He's a former DJ Delco and a former ambassador, Kingsley Makubelo. That's the kind of a person I will send there. That's the kind of person I will send to the U.S. I will not use the color. I agree with Ibrahim Rasool. Don't send a white person because you are scared of Trump. A white person from where? Except you want to send a former spy who's now the deputy minister of, and he's a political activist, a deputy minister of justice and constitutional development. So one of the people who have been mentioned to go there. I don't undermine him. I think he can make it good. But somebody, I've heard somebody in the ANC saying, yeah, we must remember this man was brought into government by President Zuma. So are we saying President Ramaphosa can trust that person with that kind of portfolio?
Okay.
You understand? There's also dynamics in the ANC.
Oh, yes.
Remember that. Will the person they send there going to serve the current administration of the ANC, the Ramaphosa administration? So there's also that dynamic.
That are they or are they not a Trojan horse?
Exactly. And again, somebody will sit and say, send a business person who will go and diffuse. Send a businessman. Send Tokyo Sekwale, he's old, but send him. He's friends with Trump. He holds Trump well. He speaks well. He can be diplomatic. Understand? The only problem with Tokyo is that, you know, he's rough in some edges, and he's also old. And yeah, but I think if he goes there and he gets a very good deputy ambassador, he can use the car. I'm using examples.
Sure.
But if it was me to make a decision, if I was part of the panel, I would say, get somebody from Derco, somebody with many years of diplomatic service who have at least served in three or more diplomatic missions. And he's going to focus on that.
I once got a phone call from Ntate Tokyo Sekwale. I was still at 5FM, I think 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to do my radio show in the afternoon. I get a call. He's like, hello, this is Tokyo Sekwali. I got your number from one of my friends at Intelligence.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you calling Intelligence for my life? And he's like, it's my daughter's birthday and she wants you to come and DJ. Are you available?
That was nice.
Unfortunately, I was out of the country for that party, so I couldn't do the party. But I was just shocked that he called guys at Intelligence to get my number. I was like,
why go that far?
When they get and why tell me? I don't want to know.
So you're asking yourself, what are the Intelligence people doing with your number?
My number.
Yeah,
but anyway, yeah, so he's an interesting gent.
He's a very interesting
gent. But I don't know that he still has the years in him to be a diplomat.
Yeah, the years is the problem. But yeah. It's a wait and see, Tato. It's a wait Absolutely. And see situation.
We are out of time, but I think it would be a bit unfortunate if we don't touch on the baby Kwekwe case.
Yes, yes.
From Matatiele, 7-year-old girl in October, raped while waiting for scholar transport. It's a massive case. And I think had the mother not gone onto a podcast to lament what they've been going through, I don't even think it would be getting the attention it's getting right now.
I think, look, it's an unfortunate and a disgusting situation.
My thing is, can we talk about the involvement of AfriForum in this whole thing?
Yes.
Because, for instance, Advocate Gerinel is obviously representing AfriForum.
Yes.
And talking about how, why are they going after the headmaster or the principal of this college?
But we don't know why.
When one, he is not a person of interest per se.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the cops have to come and say, it's for this reason.
Yes.
And Gerinel is also arguing that, also, if you ask all the staff at the school, the principal was 2 kilometers away at the time this happened. He was at another campus. Mm-hmm. So there's no way he can be a person of interest in the situation. And my argument is this, that as a principal, we take it that as a principal, one of your skills is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
One of your skills is giving a damn about your students.
Yes.
And if a 7-year-old child has been through an ordeal that is going through the paces of investigations right now, if you saying, here's my DNA to rule me out so that we can get quicker justice for this child, then surely the human in
element
you,
here.
The human in you that gives a damn about his students would do that. Then it's done and it's out of the way, whether or not you were on campus.
Tato, this is complicated. One, there's been a number of this, and I don't want to call it sexual misconduct. Mm. It's rape.
It's rape, yeah.
You understand? Once you enter into a sexual activity with somebody without consent or a minor child, it is rape. Mm. Let's call it what it is. And it's happening all over the country. This past week, it happened in a school in Limpopo. Same story in Limpopo. My problem with AfriForum and the way this whole thing is being handled, one, it is the loss of time, the time frame. Mm. October to February, we got to know about this thing in February 2025.
Sure.
That's 4 or 5 months have passed that child has been compromised. And as you correctly say, if the mother of that child, I've learned she works for the South African Police Service.
Yeah, she does.
And if that woman, who most probably one, she knows about the corruption in SAPS because she works for SAPS. She knows how docket gets lost. She knows how police gets bribed to can ignore investigation. And she pushed. And you know, thumbs up to that mother. She stood up like a mother and she said she would rather sweat blood for justice of her child because she's also a victim of rape, the mother, which was raped when she was 20 years old. And she says she doesn't want this thing to happen to any other child, and the case is swept under the carpet. That is the first part. Now, the only reason AfriForum is involved into this, and I will say it blatantly, it's racism.
Yeah, because
if that headmaster was black, AfriForum would have not been in the picture.
In fact, I will go a step further and say, if the headmaster or the principal was black and the child was white,
yes,
they would not argue the same thing with the exact same circumstances.
They will not. So AfriForum, again, and people must not think when I emphasize on these things, I agree with their racist behavior or the DA, whoever. They are serving their constituency. Mm. The constituency is a constituency of former colonial Dutch settlers who are very racist, who don't respect black life. Mm. And AfriForum exists for that. And that's why they are on the side of this principle, right or wrong. And you are saying it correct, Fresh, that the principal is like a father to the school, to all the staff members, to the cleaners, and the teachers, and the children. Mm. And you mentioned an important element, the human element, the empathy, to say, I'm going to do everything under the sun as the headmaster to aid one of my students or one of my kids. I'm going to cooperate. The fact that they are bringing legal technicalities, the human rights, and the rights of this principal above the rights of the molested and raped child, it shows the kind of organization we are dealing with.
And, you know, it broke my heart finding out that the school said to the mother, let's not make noise about this.
Yeah.
And they even said, maybe we must do a transfer.
To another school.
Because for me now, it smells like this, to this principal, this black child of yours is going to give us the necessary attention.
Attention, yes.
So maybe let's get rid of the problem and, go try at another school. And on top of that, the fact that you don't see the human being that this child is says generally then chances are you don't see black people.
Yes.
You don't see black people because if this principal was really the leader he's meant to be, and have the empathy and the leadership, he'd be leading the charge and saying, guys, I'm going to get my DNA taken so we eliminate me from this so we can get closer to justice. But on top of that, it says to me, chances are every black child at that school is an inconvenience to this man.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. The fact that they were forced to have black kids in that school is an inconvenience. It's a problem.
Yeah.
But that, you know, let's even flip the coin and look at other suspects who were there, the driver as well as the guard. I think it's the guard.
And I think the cleaning staff also.
But the person who blew the whistle on this or who called the murderer was the guard, not even the driver. You know, which guard, which person will go and commit an act of rape and after that, help the child to go and look for the mother and all those things? They're not that stupid. But the AfriForum argument that the principal was about 2 kilometers. Hey, Lord, what is 2 kilometers? I walk 2 kilometers in 5 minutes. What is 2 kilometers for a principal who has a car? And you cannot use that as an argument. Those are the details. Those are the merits. Those are the things that the lawyer of the principal, if he becomes a suspect and he gets charged, those are the arguments they will bring in court to defend, to say our client could have not committed this crime. But they are talking as if they know exactly at what time. You understand what I'm saying? Did the act happen? Because once you start mentioning the distance and the time where the principal was absent, then it means you know or you are aware at exactly what time or what do they say in law, on or about which time this act happened, of crime, the crime happened. Because if you say he was 2 kilometers away and he's a driver, how long do you drive 2 kilometers? 1 minute. You drive 2 km in 1 minute. You understand? No matter the road. Then does it mean that he could have not committed the crime? But that's not even the issue. We don't say the principal committed the crime. We are saying, Mr. Principal, here's a child who has been raped in your school. Help this child to get justice, to find
that's
the
all.
Culprit.
That's all
we are saying. The principal has a moral responsibility and duty to help this child and the family and all other kids at school who may come up and say, this thing has been happening.
Yeah.
If I was a principal, I'd be saying, what if this has been happening in my school under my leadership? Let me get to the bottom of this investigation and cooperate. And, you know, Tato, they say in Setswana, where the smoke, there's fire. You understand? The fact that the principal is being mentioned and the fact that there's this hoo-ha and protection and AfriForum stood up. But are we surprised? AfriForum leader in Limpopo is the person who killed 2 or 3 black women and fed them to the pigs. And he's an AfriForum leader. Because why? Those women were black. And we must call it what it is. Are we surprised that AfriForum is behaving this way? No, I'm not surprised. They are doing what they are existing for. White supremacy and racism in South Africa. That's why the AfriForum exists for, and nothing else. It is up to us now to rise. How are we reacting to this? As one, the government, to the community and citizens of this country. It is not the only case. It's happening. It has been happening. There have been activists who are talking about child rapes in schools, in Gauteng, in Limpopo, in squatter camps, and in townships. Everywhere in the Eastern Cape, it's very, very... Every other month, there's these cases. The one got attention because the mother stood up, went to a podcast, and thanks to that podcast for making it, you know, an opportunity for that woman to come and talk. Now we know these things are happening, and they're happening everywhere.
I think we've known they're happening.
Yes.
It's just that often they're swept under the carpet.
Exactly.
I'll give you an example. When I was 18, straight out of high school, I did national service for a year. And I was...
You did national service?
So I was a teacher for a year.
Oh, I thought in the military.
No. So our national service was basically service to the country a year.
Okay.
And then after that, you get a bursary or a scholarship to go study whatever you want to study. Not necessarily abroad. I mean, I went to law school. And I remember I taught for a year, and there was a teacher who was having a relationship with one of the girls. And it's a junior school.
Okay.
So it's girls between the age of 12 and say 14, 15. They're babies. And one of them was tiny, tiny, tiny. And you know, all the other children knew that whenever she went to see this teacher, he's having his way with her in the storeroom. You know what happened? He was transferred to another school.
Yeah.
Transferred to another school. Chances are he carried on.
Continue your conduct and behavior somewhere
but
else.
Not here.
We are protected, but not here. And also, let's look at the other side of this whole thing, Tato. It is also a concern for me that the community of Matatiele, the MEC of education in that province, decided to shut the school because the school was not cooperating. For me, that does not help. I think it's uncalled for.
Because you're punishing the other children.
You are punishing other children. You are actually applying the wrong rule of the law. Instead of pushing pressure on SAPS and the NPA to arrest suspects, to investigate, to charge and to prosecute. That's what the MEC of Education in the Eastern Cape should have done. Talk to the MEC of Community Safety, or MEC of, or even the provincial police commissioner to can put pressure on this. But you know, also, the silence of the ANC and the Democratic Alliance, these two, because the EFF has talk, Umkhonto has talk, and the others. But I want to focus on the two major political parties in the country. The silence of the ANC and the DA with these shenanigans is also worrying. I would have expected President Ramaphosa or Fikile Mbalula to stand up and talk about this. So where is the ANC Women's League? Where is COSAS in this instance? You understand? Where is the Democratic Alliance, creme de la creme, and clean of the thing? The Minister of Basic Education in this instance is a DA minister and a woman for that matter. And she has been silent about this whole thing. This is about a child in a primary school. But from my side, I think we are a sick society. If we have people in the society, and rape happens both sides, boys get raped, young people, old people, everybody gets raped in this country. At some stage, and I don't know if it's still the case, South Africa was the world capital of rape. And for me, it tells me we are a very sick society. If a human being, an old man like me, sees a seven-year-old child...
That's fair game.
As a fair game, not even fair, as somebody I can use to relieve myself, then I am sick. I don't deserve to be in the community. You understand? Tato, at my age, I don't even see, you know, my son is 21 going to 22. I don't even see a 21-year-old girl as a potential in my life or somebody I can have sexual intercourse with. Now imagine if I take it, my daughter is 8. Imagine if I take it to an extent of seeing an 8-year-old girl as a sexual object. It says we are a sick society. And those are the things we should be dealing with. You understand? If we don't charge, prosecute, and don't send these people to jail, man. Send them to jail.
But you know what the problem is, Botsang? And I realize this. We did workshops with rape survivors when I was still at YFM. So this was about 1999, 2000. And basically we were encouraging people to confront the rape survival. Because some people almost block it out, okay, or they don't want to deal with it.
Deal with it, yeah.
So we were encouraging people as part of the open disclosure campaign for people to come forward and talk about it and get help and get counseling and get therapy. And I remember one Saturday we had a session, and 99% of the women there were violated by a family member.
Yes.
And the family said, shh.
Keep quiet about this.
99%. Some of them were violated by their own fathers. And mom was aware. And she said, shh. Another one went to mom and said, uncle did this.
Yeah.
And the mom said, oh, uncle so-and-so, that's his thing. We've all been through it.
I years back, I had an encounter with Anele Mda, one of the activists.
Yes, I know Anele.
Anele is one of the people who have been outspoken. You know, the horror stories she would sit and tell me about how rapes happen, mainly, let's say, for girls and women. It's mainly within the family.
Yes.
And she was telling me that most of the time, that actually I think one day we must invite Anele to the show. Most of the time, over 90% when these things happen, it's within the family. If it's not family, the immediate, it's an extended family, a neighbor, a school teacher, principal, a pastor in church. So it's people who are in the circles of the perpetrators of rape.
It's not some guy in a dark corner.
No, no, it's not somebody. It's people who are in the circle, the gardener in your house, the pastor in church. And this thing of school teachers and principal molesting and raping kids. And and I've heard that it is actually becoming common these days that it's boys who are sodomized and raped more and more these days. It's young boys, understand? And because and people must not associate it with being gay, because that has nothing to do with being gay. Gays are not rapists. You know, but it is, like I said earlier, it demonstrates how sick of a society we are. There's something wrong in the society. And I'll tell you what is one of the things that's wrong about, and I'll talk from a government perspective. It is our punitive measures towards perpetrators of sexual violence, which is rape. Our punitive measures are not harsh enough. You know that I'm not one of the people who's calling for what do you call it, murder. When people have murdered people, they must be killed as well. I'm not calling for that, because we'll do what the apartheid government has done. We'll end up killing wrong people, because there are people who are in jail who have wrong.
Yeah, because sadly it's also been weaponized.
Yes.
Yes.
But if you will find and we have evidence as the DNA that a person has raped, let us come with something much more harsh, because we have destroyed
like
this person's
life. Because the Constitution says. But the Constitution says.
I always said one thing. Change the bloody Constitution. And does the Constitution say
the window?
Your rights as a criminal are more important and protected than the rights of the victim? The Constitution does not say that.
The window to change the Constitution when there was a nice, healthy majority has passed.
Yeah, but no. They can still change the Constitution. You don't need the nice majority of one party. If the ANC, controversies and the EFF or the DA believes that rape is a wrong thing, violation of human rights, the white people are crying of violence, of murder, of rape and all that. They are crying. Let one of those parties go and table this thing in parliament. Let's amend the Constitution that we cannot protect the rights of South Africans across the board, because we are not equal. A rapist cannot be equal to me. Why should the rapist's rights be protected equal to my rights? And that's why people will take the law into their own hands. I'm one of the people who said, anyone who's going to touch my child or my family member, I'm the one going into the dock, not that person.
I'll go to jail.
Go into the dock. I will not even ask for legal protection. I will say, I've castrated that person. The only thing I want, murder, but I'll castrate them. I'll physically do it. You know, I carry swords and knives in the car. I'll go and chop it off. I will help that person not to do it again. You understand? If we don't arrive at that stage, like we do what the Asian people are doing, what the Arab people are doing for rapists.
Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance. That's what we must arrive at. Change the Constitution. Change the Human Rights Bill. Yes, we have the rights to access to courts. We have the right to, what do you call it, equal rights, the right to security, whatever you call it. But my rights can never be equal to the right of somebody who has raped a 7-year-old child. Mm. It cannot be. Mm. Then the lawmakers are either conniving. Once I'm given an opportunity to make a law, and I make a law that says the right of a rapist is equal to the right of a victim, then I'm actually conniving. I'm complacent.
Then there's a problem with...
There's a problem.
The allocation of rights.
Yes.
And not that there should be a point system that, your rights are more weighted than mine. But at some stage, if you don't want to be a fit member of society, you can't be treated like a fit member of society.
That's why I believe in the old apartheid saying that was used wrong.
Mm.
We must remove these people permanently from the society.
Mm.
That's what we must do. The same as drinking and driving and you kill people. Why do we sentence you to jail for 7 years and then you come back after 4.5 years and you get your driver's license and you are forgiven because we believe that you are rehabilitated? I'm saying the person who has done that must go to jail for murder, must never drive, be allowed on our roads ever again.
But that's assuming that a drunk driver that kills a person will even go to jail. Many don't.
This frustrates. And you know, one day, the people of this country, black or white, pink or green, they will rise against criminals.
Mm.
And those who will come in between the criminals and the people, we will see them.
Will be fair game too.
Will be exactly. Mm. The people will do that. And people like me, I'm prepared to go to jail for my kids.
Mm.
Trust me, I will not go to the police station and or get a criminal. I will actually make sure that the legal process takes and identify the rapist. Mm. Once I know who the rapist is, I'll share a jail cell with him.
Mm.
I'll do something to be in one cell with that person.
Mm.
And I live and exist as a parent to defend and protect my kids primarily. And I think that's what the mother of Cwecwe is doing. That woman is prepared to lose her life and her job for this child. Mm. Because if she doesn't see they do that, this child is going to grow to be a teenager, to be a mother in future, and say, this happened to me and my mother failed to write to even use her position as a public servant in the police force to make sure I get justice. And I still say thumbs up to that mother and all mothers and parents and fathers and teachers, even the teachers, SADU, the teachers' unions and organizations must stand up and say, we don't want teachers who are doing this in the name of our profession as teachers. So we must also fight professionally to deal with such things. But you know what? I'm getting irritated with this rape thing in the country.
But it doesn't help because more often than not, even in the schools, you know who the teachers are that are sleeping with school children. You know the teachers, Baba Jolang, le bana ba school.
Yeah, and we allowed
and,
that.
And often it's treated like a relationship, like it's normal.
We allowed that.
Butsang is this young, new teacher, and we know Rojola, le grade 10, le grade 11. And it's okay.
We allowed it. We even made laws that says, you Jola, Mwana's Gela, who's 17. We made that law as politicians, as administrators, as legal
people. But it doesn't help if your parents are even away. For utropi waki teacher mang mang.
Sometimes with groceries.
We utropi waki teacher mang mang. So I think we have a bigger problem than we're actually willing to admit.
Social
and
ills.
We are all complicit. We are all complicit.
All of us. Mm. All of us. Even if it hasn't happened in my office, in my school, in my community, but the fact that I'm aware.
Yes.
That somebody at this age using this material. Mm. You know the old thing, we used to call it the sugar daddy syndrome.
Yes.
These days we have sugar mummies. You understand? We know and we are complacent. And like I'm saying, the social ills and the economic situation, the poverty leads to such things. By the way, people can go and argue what they want. Some of these things happen because Uncle Mamang or Botang or whoever is funding that family, is buying groceries. That's why parents will say, but if you talk, we won't have food in the house anymore. Especially in rural areas, you find chiefs, you find community leaders abusing and raping people and the family members and the community know. Because this community leader is a member of a certain political party, he's got control over tenders, or he's a chief who will give people a piece of land to can build a shack. You see, but for me, it's sickness, Tato. It's honestly sickness. What happened? Africans were never brought up poor after colonialism. Everybody was, we belong to the community.
And because the chief was the custodian of the land and meant to look after the people.
Yes.
You always made sure, Khore, even the family that had nothing never went to bed hungry.
Exactly.
Ever.
And that's the challenge we are sitting with, my brother. But again, we must change the laws of the country. My comment to the Tswetswe case is those 400 sleepies in parliament, after they do the budget vote, can they have a conversation on, let us revisit the constitution of South Africa. It's been since 1996, guys. Let's revisit this constitution. Let us visit the Bill of Rights. We can change it. And if we change it to discriminate against criminals, so what? So what? They are not normal members of the society. We cannot define an abnormal situation. We cannot normalize an abnormal situation. We cannot say all human beings have rights. Rights to what? Right to what? I've got a problem with that we have rights.
Until we can change the constitution, we're going to keep going around in this circle. And I'll tell you right now, it's not going to change anytime soon. Because the time it could have, it didn't.
Yeah.
And in fact, speaking of justice, like this literally just came in. The High Court in Qeberha, Eastern Cape, has acquitted popular Nigerian televangelist Timothy Amutosho and his two accused, who have been on trial for around 8 years. The 63-year-old and his co-accused, Lusanda Sulani, 14, and Zugi Swasito, 33, face charges which included racketeering, trafficking in persons, rape, and sexual assault. Judge Irma Schoeman delivered judgment on Wednesday morning after taking hours detailing evidence from the state, the complainants, and the defense. I'm of the view that although there are suspects, that there are aspects of the complainants that are unsatisfactory, I cannot find that their evidence is incredible. However, I cannot find that the evidence of the accused fails to be rejected as false either, the court remarked. Schoeman added that the evidence of the defense was not properly tested with a fitted cross-examination by the prosecution.
You see, so, Tata, while we are in the middle of this whole thing, the injustices,
yeah.
if you listen to what we have read, the comment of the judge, I always say the comments of the judge, they call it statement in passing, talks about legal processes, actually. It doesn't say there was no rape. It doesn't say the witnesses were lying. It says the evidence, and for me that's key, the evidence presented by the defense was not tested enough.
Absolutely.
So in other words, the state, the prosecutors, or if there were lawyers of the complainants, which in this instance it should be the prosecutor.
So innocence was not proven.
Yes, you understand? Innocence was not proven.
But the fact that these things happened were not proven either.
The judge actually went further and say, there is no total, you know, innocence without, in this whole thing.
Yeah, but nothing was proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because the prosecuting authority did not grill or expose or test the defense presentation. You know, again, it's injustice. Again, it's a technicality. And Chato, how long did this case take?
8 years.
8 years. In between these 8 years, a chief witness was murdered.
I was going to say, when there's a massive case like this, and all of a sudden your star witness is gunned down.
Yes.
At some stage, that should add weight somewhere.
Exactly.
I mean, I know the courts don't work like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the courts don't work like that. The courts work on what has been presented.
In front of the court, yes.
Absolutely. But when a star witness has been murdered, that should count for some sort of weight somewhere.
If the wheels of justice were properly oiled and turning fast enough, this case would have not taken 8 years.
Anyway.
You know, that was the first wrong thing. But this is South Africa. Everything takes forever. I was sentenced, you know, I was sentenced to imprisonment and I had a criminal record. Because in the middle of my case of assault, my chief witness, who was an old man, manager of a filling station, passed on. And I got convicted because the state could not accept the statement of my chief witness. It was not tested. The same thing. The prosecuting authority said, he is not there so that we can cross-examine. And the same thing has happened in this. And this is a multiple rape, molestation, abduction case. It was not one person complaining about this Nigerian television pastor. It was multiple number of people. And we are sitting here as a nation and a court of law that says we failed. And when I say we, I mean the National Prosecuting Authority, they've actually messed up with this case. It took too long. We allow it.
But didn't one of the survivors even give a brave testimony about 8 years ago. So that counted for nothing.
The details, I've lost track of this case because I realized the way it's going.
I remember her brave testimony back then.
The details, and that girl was prepared, you know, to die for telling the truth. And then another witness was killed. And again, you know, it's the injustices of the justice system. Our system has failed those victims in the case of Timothy. You understand? This guy's going to pack his bags and go to Nigeria. That's what's going to happen.
Or jump back on TV and make money.
And because if he remains in this country, the community and the families of those victims may go for him. But you may find that he's got security that we can't penetrate. He's got bodyguards with rifles, you understand? And this is where we should revisit our justice system. You know, I always talk about this, and people think the courts are not fair, the courts don't favor the victims and all. It is not the courts, it is the justice system. And I say, it is the system that governs our life. And I say, how much more can you go, and when you have 8 witnesses saying this person has raped us, this person has abused us sexually, this person has done A, B, C, D, and E, what more, how much of testimony is better than the actual person talking?
Yeah.
How much more? And again, we think Cwecwe will get justice when the 8 people that were abused and raped and molested by a supposed to be pastor have lost the case. The man is a free man now. We can't call him a rapist. And so again, it questions the ability of our NPA. You know, Gerinel, 3 weeks back, when the Afri Forum came back from the US and NPA said MK and others, they are highly investigating, the Hawks are investigating their conduct. Harry Nell said this way, bring it on because we know the NPA is useless.
Yeah.
He said those words. He's the former senior prosecutor in the NPA, one of the leading legal eagles in this country. And he stands up and says, an organization, a Chapter 9 institution that is supposed to safeguard our legal well-being and rights is useless.
But, having said that, there was no case anyway. There was no way you could have charged them with treason or treasonous behavior. So that would not have stood in court anyway.
Anyway, you can't charge white people for treason in this country. You cannot. They own the country, they own the law, they own the constitution. No, but we are subject to them.
But to be fair, even if a black person did the exact same thing, you can't show them with treason.
No, that was...
Because the test for treason is up here.
Yeah.
And what they did is down here.
Yes, an entry level for that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, sad news for the victims of rape in the Timothy... What? Timothy who?
Amutosho.
Amutosho's case. I'm very sad about... Actually, this show today is ending on a sad note. In future, we must actually have this sad one somewhere in the middle. Start on a high note, like we are going to radio,
so you can talk fall politics, out.
And we fall out nicely so that I can have a nice weekend. Not absolutely. This. Anyway, tough luck, bro.
Anyway, I love your passion.
You love my...
What I love your passion. Oh. No, about the fact that nothing changes if nothing changes.
Yes.
And nothing is changing.
Thanks, Brother Fresh.
So nothing is going to change.
Thank you.
Unfortunately. What are your thoughts? We'd love to hear from you. Please comment, share, like, subscribe, give us your thoughts. What is the solution? Is there a solution? Or is it a simple case of we are all complicit because by hook or crook, we know someone that knows someone that is dealing with this and the family is fully aware that it's happening?
Yeah.
Where do we find you online, sir?
Botsangm@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And on WhatsApp, it's 082-485-9100. And on social media handles, is @Botsangm.
We are done for the week. Thank you for tuning in to #Politrix on Wow, What a Week. Coming to you from Amped Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works are responsible for the cinematography. Thank you for making us look good, Trev. And shout out to Otis the Flo Fraser for all of the imaging. Kileso Modisa King is our executive producer. And you are our faves because you are part of what we do. We will see you on radio in winter for #Politrix with Botsang Muilwa on 938. Till next week, have a wow week. in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.